Hi, and welcome to Weekend Connection. A caregiver is designed as a family member or maybe a paid helper who will regularly look after a child or a sick, elderly, or disabled person. And while that definition may sound fairly simple, a longer look at the duties and demands on the caregiver himself or herself remind us that sometimes it's not simple or easy to take care of a loved one. Today, some help from someone who's been a caregiver and continues to do that. Anne Marie Hancock has been a news reporter and talk show host. She's an author, and we welcome her today. Welcome to Weekend Connection.
Thank you, Mike. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
Hey, when someone is sick, our thoughts naturally go to that sick person. That's natural. That's good. But there's also the aspect of the needs of the caregiver, and they should be considered too, shouldn't they?
Yes, I think that's very accurate. You know, I was doing an interview yesterday, and we were talking about the old days versus today. And I speak often about the Walton family mentality. We have a large family, and we go back to the 60s. And to a time when many did watch that show, The Waltons, and everybody took care of their own. They took care of them in their own homes. You had cousins and uncles and aunts all living together. And you said it well in your introduction. You know, we are focused on the sick one, and everybody pitches in. Everybody does their part. Today, not so much. I've often said I think we're living in very egocentric times, and the focus is me, my space, my time, my space, so forth and so on. And that isn't to say that there aren't reasons and aren't people who would love to care for their loved ones, but due to work responsibilities and other responsibilities, they have to defer to nursing home or something else. For me, I walked away from everything I was doing and made the commitment to care for my mother who had squamous cell cancer. I did that for 3 years, and I often say you get no prize for doing the loving thing. We should all be doing the loving thing. And this was an adventure for me. And obviously a commitment. And I thought I was very, very well prepared for it. Why? I had had an international healing ministry, and it sort of evolved from, I spoke at the first papal conference in America, the only woman to do so. And it got a little attention. And then I started traveling. Tremendous blessing to me. My time was with sick children and sick adults, and sick is probably an understatement. The terminally ill is where and the area I spent my time, and it was the greatest privilege of my life. I thought I was very well equipped to take on this three-year journey with my mom, and I went into it with a lot of confidence. And the Lord was very quick to humble me. All people are different, of course, and thank God. Each unique and extraordinary made the image and likeness of God. But there are some folks, and we all know at least one, who is a little more complex than the rest, or maybe difficult. And my mom was quite a challenge. I talk about the generational thing where so many that came out of World War II believe my business is my business. I'm not calling an ambulance. The neighbors are not going to hear what's going on. It's not their business. They're very private. They're also very stalwart. You don't complain if you have a pain level of 10 on a scale of 10. You just swallow that. Again, there are products, many of them, of World War II. My mother was a Navy nurse. That's how she met my father. during the war. He was injured, a Marine. And consequently, there was a mindset that very much affected my journey with Mom. And so I had to come up with some better tools. And humility was one. And I found myself every evening saying, "All right, Lord, it didn't go so well today. I love conversations with God. And I know he knows my every thought anyway, and he knew that day didn't go well." Mm-hmm. And I'd say, "But please, give me your words, give me your heart, give me your mind, give me your ears. I'm going to go back in tomorrow and try harder." So God was always Mike, my go-to, and his mother. And second was a sense of humor. My mom was very challenging, and often I would be called, for instance, a moron. And our name is spelled M-O-R-A-N, but it's pronounced moron. And I told Mom, I said, "I did some homework on our name, Mom. And the fact is, we're a whole family of morons, all 14 of us, all of us morons." And I found that a sense of humor would often just cut through the stress, through the tension of a difficult day for her, for me. She would often tell me that I drove like Moses. I would ask her when she saw Moses drive, and we would giggle together. And, of course, there were some difficult times, too. Mom was 90 when they took the top of her head, the side of her face, with cancer. And very, very, very difficult time. And she had her own preconceptions about what would take place after she went home. And, of course, at the top of her list was her car. But driving was an issue. We talked about it and said maybe with cancer having gone to the brain and then multiple surgeries, let us serve you. It's our turn. And she would quickly put us in our place. And I often tell several stories that took place. They're in the book, and the stories took place in the car. One day we were going across the river to visit my son. I insisted on driving. That didn't work. She put me in my place in the passenger seat and proceeded to run two stoplights at major intersections. I said, "Mom, I think we ran two stoplights." She said, "Ann, don't worry about it. Your father did it all the time." So what do you do with that? We had advised her not to renew her driver's license at age 91. And I got a call one morning about 9 o'clock, and she was speaking in a whisper. I don't know why. And I said, "Mom, is that you?" She said, "Of course, it's me. Who else would it be?" I said, "Where are you?" She said, "I'm at DMV. Guess what? All I had to do was read the eye chart. I passed. I'm going shopping. I got my license renewed." So it's very hard. I think, particularly with parents, we have loved them, respected them for a lifetime. We have honored their word. We've honored their wishes. And we've been, hopefully many of us, obedient and trusting of them. But there comes a point when, for instance, in my case, cancer went to Mom's brain. We're now have gone from 90 years old to 91. There is a role reversal. And often that for me was one of the greatest challenges, because I felt I was usurping my mother's authority. And that, of course, is never, ever our intention. We're concerned about their health. We're concerned about their safety. And safety was a huge issue. I had already mentioned Mom was running stoplights. And then one Sunday, I got a call from the hospital, and my mom had tried to get to her automobile in the garage, wasn't feeling well. She fell, she hit her head on her automobile, and then crawled from the garage all the way back to a telephone in the living room there, and called for a ride, called my sister, couldn't reach us, for a ride to the hospital. She was told promptly, call an ambulance, call an ambulance, and I'm on my way. And of course, my sister's concern was that there was a lot of bleeding. You didn't know how badly she was hurt. But my mother's retort is what's interesting. Mom said, you get over here, and you get over here now and get me. That happened, and an ambulance was called. She had cracked her head open. She needed stitches. And then 2 days later, she had a heart attack. This is with the cancer. But determined to do it her way. And we go back to that delicate dance of, okay, now I need to, and I don't even like to say it, assert some authority for her safety, which my mom, of course, had done for me and my sisters my whole life. But, you know, we would say, okay, it's best now because we have a few more challenges. We don't drive this car anymore. And mom was so quick to say, you don't tell me what to do. I'm the mother. So you learn sometimes that silence is golden. You pick your battles, and that's an art form too. You know, if mom's saying, don't bring the chicken salad in one more time, fine, I can handle that, and we'll do something else. We'll do bologna, we'll do ham, whatever. But when the cancer patient with cancer, once again, that's cracked her spine, gone to her brain, is driving her car, it is not safe for her, and it's not safe for everyone out there that doesn't know how ill she is. So lots of things, Mike, lots of things to consider. My father died suddenly in the middle of mom's cancer journey. And that was an enormous shock to all of us. He was a businessman. He was an athlete. He played tennis at age 85 with 65-year-olds and said they were too old for him. He was still winning tennis matches. And he was a fireball. He was the life of the party. Went to bed one evening during this process with mom. Just didn't wake up. And my mom was, of course, devastated. We were all devastated. And that was just another challenge with this three-year journey. But I was to learn a lot about humility. I was also to learn that often silence is golden. I thought speaking, you know, all over the country and out of the country, you know, I needed to say things to mom, that my words were necessary. And my mom was very quick to remind me that she didn't need my speeches or lectures, and she was very correct, and that was something incredible that I learned. Sometimes I would go, and we would sit for 2 or 3 hours in silence, and I'd pick up the little candy wrappers under the bed. I would check her meds. I would line them up for the next day, make sure her bath lotions and her straws were at the side of her bed. And I learned that often our words are neither necessary or welcome. I was concerned at the end of her life when we knew it was going to be a matter of days. Mom had not talked about spiritual things. And I realized that I thought it was my job to help her with that. And I was humbled again. I would bring stacks of books in every day, and she would tell me to take my stacks out. She would tell me I needed to lighten up and watch Archie Bunker or Andy Griffith on cable and get a life, that I was too serious. I'd haul those books out with my head dropped. But then I'd come back a couple more days and put a couple more down just in case she wanted to pick them up. And towards the very end, I was so gratified. I was so stunned. I was leaving her home, and she said, "Ann, hey, I want you to know something." I said, "Yes." She said, "That book." I said, "Did you read it?" No. I scanned it, and I found some prayers in there that I liked very much. And I just want you to know I said them.
We're talking with Ann Marie Hancock, author of the book, You Can't Drive Your Car to the Funeral. And she's talked about humor, about attitude, about picking your battles, and how silence is golden. Let's talk a little bit about helping your daughter, because in some ways that would be different than helping your mother. How was it different?
Oh, my golly. We're all different. And Corey and my mother are probably as different as day and night. As I said, you had the generational thing with mom. We're products of our environment, the times we were raised in, the people who raised us, the lessons they taught. And you throw in the fact that my daughter is very, very open. Corey is just an incredible person, as was my mother. She was an athlete. She was a champion tennis player. She was an equestrian. She is very beautiful. And after a ski trip 1 year out to Vail, she got very sick on the plane. And as soon as we landed, they took her to the hospital. And she had a toxic response to an antibiotic. But once again, we could see God's hand in this, because we thought, well, they'll give her the medication, the pain will stop, we'll go home. But I got the phone call from a lovely and astute doctor who noticed that Corey's balance was off when she got out of bed at the hospital. He took it upon himself to do a CAT scan, and they found multiple sclerosis. And Corey has had multiple sclerosis now for probably 20 years. She has never, ever given this disease an ounce of energy. She doesn't say multiple sclerosis unless we're going to the multiple sclerosis banquet. That's the only time it's mentioned. She was out on a jet ski last weekend. Her beautiful husband, Dan, lifted her. Corey can't walk. Lifted her and put her on the jet ski, and much like Mama's car, she was free and happy out on the water with her husband on this jet ski. Even with the MS, she went to her children's skating parties and would sit, participate, or the kids would kind of help her and pull her along a little bit. This was a few years back. But she is the most courageous, beautiful, loving, uplifting soul. She inspires all of us in this family. She makes us all better than we are. Her life is the lesson in courage and in love and in joy. If joy is the infallible presence of God, Corey just emits that joy every day consistently in her life. And I had mentioned the multiple sclerosis banquet that's an annual thing for the state of Carolina. I had called Mike Krzyzewski, the winningest coach in basketball, comes from Duke, of course, and I asked if he would speak. He had, I think it was Grant Edwards, who played for him, and his wife had MS. And Mike agreed to do that. Such a gracious, loving man. And we went. He fell in love with Corey, as did his wife, Mickey. He wrote to her, sent T-shirts to the family, invited him to practices at Duke. And if people go on my website, which is simply authorannemariehancock.com, there is a letter on that website about Corey Crawford Hancock. I should say Corey Hancock Crawford. And Mike calls her a Hall of Famer. He calls her inspiring. He has compared her in a speech to Michael Jordan when he was working with Michael in the Olympics. And Corey's love, smile, courage, all of it is absolutely contagious. I had talked to her once, maybe, about being in a support group, and she said, "Mom, so often I find that people in some of these groups, they are very depressed. Their cups are always half empty." She said, "My life is so much better when I consider my cup to be half full, when I summon my gift of joy each morning, when I look for the joy and something to celebrate it each day, and the fact that I'm alive, that I'm here, and I'm still participating in life." She said, "I don't need to be discouraged. I feel God put me here to uplift."
We're talking with Anne Marie Hancock, author of the book, You Can't Drive Your Car to the Funeral. And we'll talk about that title a little bit later. Let's see if you have a few ideas for us, though, before we get to that, on caregivers themselves. And because we're involved trying to help somebody else, we can neglect our own needs. So what advice would you have for those who are in a situation where they're trying to help, and yet it wears them out?
You know, this is very accurate, Mike. And at the top of my list, and maybe the most difficult challenge for me personally, and people may say, "We don't care about your challenge. We want to know about all the challenges." But I think it applies to many, so I'll share it. And that's not to take things personally. I've spent my life in radio and television, and I don't have to tell you. I'm confident you've spent a lot of your life there, too. Mm-hmm. And everyone doesn't love us. Mm-hmm. There's always the one periodically that they may hate, whether it's you, your hair, your outfit, or what you said, and they're going to be very vocal, very verbal about it. I would say to that, we learn in radio and TV to just discern what has merit and what doesn't. But when is it difficult? It's difficult when you're taking care of someone you love. It's personal. And when the ones you love the most, mom, dad, sister, brother, uncle, call you a moron or an idiot or tell you, "Go home, I don't want to see you anymore today," there is a tendency to take it personally. And so the advice I would give you from my own experience is to remember, this is not about us. This is the sick person's journey. We have made the commitment to say things, do things that are helpful, hopeful, and uplifting. It is our position to remember that the sick, the terminally ill, are walking this journey alone. They are frightened. They are scared. They may be terrified. They are depressed. They are grieving, and all of those things take place at different levels, at different times, and we need to be very patient to remember that when something comes out that we perceive as ugly or hateful, they are not intending to hurt or to target. It's kind of a backhanded compliment that they would love you enough and be comfortable enough to let it all hang out for a minute because they're in pain, because they're suffering. So this is the thing. Remember, it's not my journey. It's not our journey. We have made the commitment to be loving and kind to someone that has always been kind and good to us, and they're walking a lonely road. If you keep that in your head, then you can keep your focus no matter what you're called. No matter what you're called. The other thing, don't feel badly when you need a break. Do not guilt yourself. Guilt is a destructive emotion. It comes from fear. I have always said we are either in love or we are in fear. And from fear comes everything negative, guilt, shame, judgment. You're doing the very best you can. If you could do better, we would. But at every given moment in time, you're going to be fatigued. There are days, some, that will not go well. Thank God for the opportunity to serve. Unite your sufferings with the Lord, that man who walked that sorrowful journey to the cross. Offer it up for a greater intention, maybe the person you're taking care of. But don't go home and get down on yourself. That fear, that shame, that guilt is not of God. God is love. Have conversations with God. If that's your bent, and prayerfully, hopefully you have a relationship with him, and talk to that God just the way you would talk to your sister, brother, or best friend. I'm hurt. I'm down. I feel awful today. I just feel like I'm not doing enough. I'm not good enough. And wait and listen for the Lord's peace and comfort to come over you. Our prayers don't have to be complicated. In fact, I prefer mine be very simple, because I know that my God knows my heart. So he doesn't need all the verbiage. I say, help me to go back in there tomorrow with love, with joy in my heart, and to know that it is a gift to you, Lord, that I can serve.
The voice of experience, Anne Marie Hancock, talking about her role as a caregiver in the past and the present. Perspective, humor, attitude, picking your battles, silence is golden, all good advice for us today. I mentioned earlier you are the author of a book, the title, You Can't Drive Your Car to Your Funeral. In the minute or so we have left, tell us about that title. What are you telling us in that?
Well, I'm telling you that most of the journey with Mom took place in that little red Toyota, and the license plate was significant. Her license plate was perfect. And that car represents, in psychology, dream interpretation, in so many areas, it represents what? That vehicle taking us to or away from something. And the vehicle for my mom took her from cancer and away from it. In her car, she was free and independent. There was no one lecturing or talking at her, and cancer didn't exist in her little red Toyota. So very significant. So many of our stories took place there. It's a compilation of a three-year journey that came from my journal. You can find lots of information on my website, AnneMarieHancock.com, author AnneMarieHancock.com. And Mike Krzyzewski, the winningest coach in basketball, who talks about my daughter and her MS, his letter is there, information about my daughter. I do not keep any monies from this book. I made the choice to give everything to multiple sclerosis, not just to honor my daughter, but for research in hopes that we will find a cure for this awful disease. So everything there. There are lots of interviews there. I hope yours will be there, Mike, too. And so you can just kind of look through all of it and see the book is available on Amazon. It's on the bestsellers list on Amazon in three categories. It's biography, medical, and short stories. And lots of information there. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. And if you can find it, you please, please, please just go on that website and you will see numbers at the bottom and you call and say, I need that book and I want to help MS.
That's authorannemariehancock.com. Anne-Marie, thanks for sharing with us today about your journey.
Oh, you're wonderful for having me, Mike. I'm so grateful.